hot Pilates or something in the convention center there.
It literally looked like he raided his cube to play the format.
50% of the time, it feels like you're cheating.
And it's still going to have relevance. I don't know if the same can be said with modern.
They gave me a $100 bill, and they folded it wrong.
It's always a possibility storm when Matt's involved.
You pick who you pick, and that's just how we're doing.
Looks like Michael Bay had a wet dream and a nightmare at the same time.
Ride or die, brother, man. Ride or die. Oh, you brave soul. Welcome to this week's offering of Tryhards. I'm Sean Seacrease. He's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. Coming up this week, it's a Pro Tour Pick'em week. It's never more contentious or any more fun than it is on these weeks. These weeks? You mean the weeks that Wizards has decided to give out something shiny that wasn't already pre-approved? All right, Matt is already approaching the soapbox. We'll limit his gaveling to just a few moments. We get it started each week with, what are you drinking? Brian, what are you drinking this week?
I'm a little low on the malted beverage, so I am cracking over one of the copious amounts of wine bottles that we have for some reason in the basement. So I'm drinking a pretty crisp white Sauvignon Blanc, of all things, for you fancy people out there. It's delicious. I was making a little risotto last night, so I needed some wine, came up and got it, so I'm just finishing it off.
Matt, what are you drinking?
Lauren was out of town this weekend. She cheated on our diet, so I cheated on our diet, and I am drinking some apple cider with rum in it because we have a little bit left in the fridge, and we're back on the low-carb diet tomorrow.
Everybody knows that if somebody cheats, both of you cheat, then it's
right.
All
we're
equal.
One amalgamous blob. That's just like a formless shape at this point.
It's all equal at that point. I told Brian last week that the Central Waters Satin Solitude is quickly becoming my favorite imperial. I have to put an asterisk on that, Brian, and you'll understand this. Both of you will. When I say it's my favorite imperial, what you should understand, it's my favorite imperial that I can get at my liquor store in town whenever I want it. I'm not saying it's not good. I'm just also not saying it's not the greatest thing since sliced bread. I'm still open to challengers to the throne, but the Central Waters Satin Solitude, absolutely fantastic if you want to grab something and have a moment to yourself and enjoy something a little heavier as we get into the colder parts of the season. Guys, what magic did you play this week? Now that we've got something delicious in the glass, it's time to talk about how we did. We're going to start with me and my failings. Matt, last week I mentioned that I was struggling on Arena, and you put it in my face and said you hadn't failed to win less than 5 games in a draft. All right, maybe I'm going to have to study how to draft with you because I've really been struggling in order to get this done, but I have put in some more time playing it. And this time of year with my schedule and everything else, Arena has actually been a godsend for me because I can play whenever I want and literally play whatever I want. So I have 2 branches on the tree right now. When I want to play for fun, and this deck's actually been much better than it deserves to be, I'm playing a Naya ramp deck that I'm just having so much fun with. I can't even tell you. We're surviving from the ashes or life from the ashes or whatever it is. And they were using the early fountain of renewal with the white enchantment, the something hope that you can draw a card
of hope,
gain some life. Yes, that's fantastic. And then we ramp up and then we play Palakka Worm and Uncounterable Banefires. There might be a Zakama in there. There are definitely some Carnage Tyrants and no aggressive or medium deck likes it when you've got like 14 mana and you play March of the Masses. So, or March of the Multitudes. That is absolutely fantastic. That deck's a lot of fun to play. I'm actually winning more than I thought I would with it. But when I'm actually playing to play and win, my bug control deck that I've been working on has been really good. This is essentially blue-black, splashes green for Assassin's Trophy and a couple of Vraskas. Doom Whisperer is the big threat. And then by keeping other creatures out of the main in games 2 and 3, you can bring in the Specter of Insanity, and it really keeps other control decks sort of off balance. So I've been having a really good result with my bug control deck that I've been working on developing. Guys, what have you been playing? Matt, you've gotten a little bit of time on your hands. You're leading into the SCG Invitational later in December. What have you been concentrating on playing right now?
So mostly it's still been my modern bug deck. I played through a couple of leagues this week. I had people over Saturday, and I decided to play the modern challenge. I'm going to tell you, I had a win, a loss, two wins, and then two more losses, and it was seven rounds, and I gave up at that point. And then, of course, like all the leagues I could squeeze in, I've been getting a lot of three and twos, twos and threes. I just think it's a matter of tweaking my sideboard and finishing off my sideboard guide. I also got to draft Friday night. A girlfriend was out of town from Thursday until today, actually. And so texted a couple of my friends, hey, you guys want to draft? They're like, yeah, sure, let's do it. Pack one, pick one was a foil Doom Whisperer. So I was okay with that. I ended up in a your standard Dimir Surveil deck. I had, I don't know, nine ways to trigger Surveil, and just, I don't even know how to describe it. It wasn't, I wouldn't say it was an absolutely broken deck, but it was pretty consistent. I had two or three Dimir Guild Mages, but I also opened two of the mill cards that every time you Surveil, target player puts two cards into their graveyard, ran both of them, and was able to utilize that quite a bit to actually mill some of my opponents out. I was really, really light on threats, but that foil Doom Whisperer really, really helped.
Brian, before we get into what you played this week, on a scale of 1 to 10, how jealous are you that Matt got to mill people out in draft?
I can't even believe that that actually was a thing. Getting past that stuff, I don't even know if I would pass that to somebody in a draft, because I know that if I would play that person, realizing that I got milled out by cards that I've passed them, I'd probably just want to grab my stuff and go home.
It really forced people to play defensively as well, and it was just a ton of fun.
So, Brian, what Magic did you actually play this week?
What Magic did I play this week? I went down to the shop and perused the cases. I was looking for a Humility to add to my new Legacy brew. They didn't have one, so I'm still on the hunt for a Humility. So patrons hit me up. But play Magic? No, I didn't get to play any Magic, unfortunately.
All of Brian's Magic playing was apparently exiled before he could actually draw the cards. So we'll let him actually survive through that here this week on Tryhards. We got together with our great friends at Patreon who had dropped us a note about the way we were doing our raffles. And Matt, we are going to be bringing the raffles back starting tonight. They're just going to have a little bit different format to make sure that everybody keeps up with the legalese involved in the situation. For this week, another pack of GP lands that we picked up at GP Minnesota. Brian has them, and Matt, explain to us how everyone's going to get involved who's not already a patron.
So we had to come up with kind of a unique way to do the new raffles, but what we're going to do is when the casters are released every week, that we have a raffle week, we're going to announce the prize that Monday. The day the cast is announced, I'm going to put up a Twitter announcement and say, comment on this for an entry. All of our patrons will get automatic entries into that. So it'll be one at your normal level and two and three entries, depending on what level of patron you are. Then the following Monday, we will draw and announce. I know it makes it a little more complicated, but that's about the easiest way we could do it and the way that patron wanted us to do that.
We still get to give you sweet stuff. We're just going to do it in a little bit different form going forward. So this week, we've got some GP lands. And Matt, what do they have to hashtag in order to be in when we draw next week?
We will do tryhards. So that's hashtag T-R-I-H-A-R-D-S. Anybody who's not a patron to get automatic entry, comment on the Twitter message I shoot out, and we will get you entered. And I'll have all those put together for our recording next week.
And as a penalty for doing that, Matt will have to pay the postage for anyone who wins as we send this out, which is a huge relief to Brian, who usually has to send something to Sweden or Australia every time it's his turn to send something out.
Every time.
That brings us up to this week's tournaments. There was a sweet one this weekend. And if you've been joining us for a while on Tryhards, you know about our love for Legacy. It is our favorite Eternal format. It was Eternal weekend this weekend, and it's with a bit of heavy heart because last year we were able to go to Pittsburgh, record at Pittsburgh, and do a very special show that we sort of watched this happen. Matt had an absolutely outstanding result when we were there last. It was with Food Chain, and I think that's going to come up again. Brian, you were looking very closely at this week's North American Eternal weekend.
Yeah, and this was a great one, guys. I really kind of was bemoaning the fact that we weren't able to make it out, because from the first round of Vintage to the last round of Legacy, this seemed like a fantastic weekend to love the Eternal formats. So let's start with the granddaddy of them all and finish on our favorite format. So 381 players assembled in Pittsburgh for the Vintage North American Championships. And it was no surprise that we had two Paradoxical Outcome Mentor decks and two Ravager Shops decks in the top eight. But what were the other four? The other four, gentlemen, Matt Sperling on Pyromancer Control, Elliot Burke on Landstill, Marshall Arthurs on Vengeful Survival, Como Kwok on Grixis Thieves. Four amazing decks that we have really not seen that much before in the Vintage landscape. However, to show the power level, we had a mirror match of Paradoxical Mentor lists and a mirror match of Ravager Shops lists. So each of those decks met in the finals. Taking it down was last year's Legacy champion, Brian Koval. This year decided to up the ante, takes down Namtran. Paradoxical Mentor gets past Ravager Shops in two quick games. And I tell you what, guys, the Paradoxical Mentor list, I was so impressed with this. I used to think Ravager Shops was the best of the Vintage decks, but I think I've changed my mind after this weekend. Sean, what do you think about the power of Paradoxical Outcome in this format?
Well, the Xerox decks were king for a long time in Vintage. And the fact that Mentor had to be restricted just shows you how good it really was. Remember, this is a format where Brainstorm is restricted. So you have to take into account those different things from Legacy. The Xerox Mentor decks, and I'm not an official Vintage aficionado, were just so good that they had to sort of collar them in some way. And the fact they were able to take down Ravager Shops just speaks to me about the power level that those Xerox Mentor decks are still able to achieve, because on raw power level, the Shops decks in Vintage are just absolutely mind-blowing. So the fact that they are not able to overwhelm the format just tells me how good the other strategies actually are.
Hurley, did you get to watch any of the Vintage this weekend?
I did, in fact. I had mentioned earlier that we had people over. We actually had the coverage in the background because a lot of us are, you know, Legacy players, and it was mostly Magic players there. It was really, really interesting to see. I noticed some of the Mentor decks have been kind of tweaking the list a little more. It's interesting to watch how much fun Vintage can be. Also a nice thing not to see, like, just Shops just blowing up everybody else. I was looking at Vintage last year. I was worried about that. At one point, my phone buzzed, and it was on Facebook, and it said, "Hey, remember this from a year ago?" It was a picture of me that I had posted, actually, with my Food Chain deck, like, sprawled out, and then Food Chain was up on the screen, actually, for Eternal Weekend. And I was like, oh, I wish I would have gone to Eternal Weekend this year.
Oh, don't we all? And if we could have only played a little bit of Vintage just like these guys could have. So the best play I saw from Ravager Shops this weekend was game two against the Mentor decks, the Paradoxical Mentor decks. Namtran plays a turn one Precursor Golem, putting 9 power onto the table. And then second turn, he plays a Phyrexian Metamorph and puts another 9 power onto the table. Yeah, that game ended pretty quickly. But the best thing I saw this weekend was out of Brian Koval. Brian was playing round 9 and was not a lock for anything, because this one went to about 11 rounds, was kind of struggling. They both had Libraries of Alexandria out, he and his opponent. His opponent activates library, draws, maybe casts something, and then passes the turn. And then Brian looks like he's in a tough spot, and then a judge kind of stops the match and looks and notices that the guy passed without discarding the hand size, and had noticed that this was his third GRV of the tournament. Instant game loss. Brian gets to advance to round 10. Round 10, he gets paired down, but draws a horrible, horrible matchup for him. And he is in game three, ready to concede the match, is actually reaching across the table for the handshake to concede to his opponent. And the judge stops and says, "Wait." And his opponent had done the exact same thing, had activated library, had drawn, did not discard the hand size. His third GRV of the tournament, instant game loss, match loss. And there goes Brian Koval into the top 8. Brian Koval tried to get the judge to downgrade the penalty because he didn't want to get into the top eight like this. But the judge is like, hey, it's policy. I have no control over this. And so he was running so hot that from there, from almost not making it into the top eight, he runs through and wins the whole thing. So congratulations to Brian Koval. That, guys, was just something I had never seen before. And especially out of these vintage players who are so, so adept at these decks, it was a little surprising to me.
Brian, is that when you text the Shamrock and the Brian Koval logo to me? Because you're like, this guy's luck this weekend. It's been just amazing.
He was running so incredibly hot. And the coverage, actually, I thought was really good.
I'm going to take umbrage with you there.
Well, okay, listen. It's the coverage for what I was expecting, I thought, was okay. Randy Buehler is a national treasure, as we all know. And the amount that that guy was shifting in his seat, I thought he was doing, like, hot Pilates or something in the convention center there. He just could not control himself with some of the plays that were being made.
When you're a player of Randy Buehler's stature and you have his history in R&D and development of the game, it has to be tough to walk that line. And he should be good at it by now because he's been in the role of community leader commentator for quite some time. And I would hope that he would spearhead such an event as Eternal Weekend from that mode. We love Legacy, and this is the Eternal format of preference. Here on Tryhards, I was enamored with the Legacy metagame this weekend. How did it play out?
628 people showed up for Legacy at Eternal Weekend in Pittsburgh. And the metagame, guys, was pretty wide open, it seemed, all the way throughout. And I say the top eight looked like it bore that out as well, with only one deck having multiple copies. And that was Turbo Depths, Andrew Dilks and Jake Weinman. Both dispatched fairly early. We had Brandon DeVera on Sneak and Show, Brendan Hagen on Elves, Patrick Green on Miracles, Chris Walton on a sweet check pile deck, John McDermott on Grixis Control, and then the everybody's favorite Cyrus Corman Gill on Ad Nauseam Tendrils, who had not dropped a match all weekend going into the top eight. Gentlemen, it came down to Patrick Green on Miracles versus Cyrus Corman Gill on Ad Nauseam Tendrils. In a very close game three, Patrick Green's counterbalance did some amazing work and just shut down the Ant deck and got in there for the win on the back of a Snapcaster Mage who just beat down, I think, for a total of 16 points of damage. It was unbelievable. You could tell that a lot of people were disappointed at Cyrus Corman Gill, who played amazing all weekend, and I think he just ran into a very, very bad luck in the final round and some amazing play from Patrick Green. So congratulations to Patrick Green on Miracles over this. He was running the accumulated knowledge version of Miracles, which I think is kind of where people are deciding where to go with this deck. And I think that's probably the right call. Hurley, have you seen other builds of Miracles, and would you go another route, or is the accumulated knowledge where we want to be right now?
I think right now accumulated knowledge is kind of where you want to be. The people still don't, I shouldn't say know how to play the deck as far with accumulated knowledge, but they don't see the card advantage that you get from accumulating knowledge over the course of a long game. And that's what's really important with Miracles as well. So I think there's a lot of customization to be done there, but whatever gets Legacy played the most, that's what I'm down with.
Sean, was there any deck that caught your eye over the Legacy metagame that you saw? And I thought, would you be in agreement that this was a pretty wide open top eight?
Well, the first thing that occurred to me was the metagame shifts at Eternal Weekend seemed to be a part of their own glacial pace, even compared to the rest of Legacy. It's like Eternal Weekend exists in its own bubble compared to the rest of the Legacy format, and decks from 3 years ago may still be relevant, you know, this year or a year ago, Food Chain Hurley, and you can still do very well with them at this tournament. When you guys were watching, did that occur to you too, that this metagame seems to be almost encased in glass, separate from other developments that you see in Legacy?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's part of the draw, is that you want to get a deck that you're really, really good with, and you can just kind of put it on the shelf and practice with it a little bit, bring it back out, and it's still going to have relevance. I don't know if the same can be said with certain modern decks perhaps, but not all. I find that the glacial shifts, as you say, Sean, it takes practice keeping up on maybe what are the small sideboard changes you can make? What are some of the new cards that you can include in some decks that might give you a slight edge? or just the numbers across those. But yeah, I'm pretty happy with this. You know, a lot of people are probably looking around saying Death Rite, huh? And it just, it allows a whole other slew of decks, you know, to rise up. But hey, we had an Elves deck in the top eight. I think that's a pretty good sign.
Maybe that's a sign that the format is healthy. GP Atlanta played out this weekend. It had Modern on the brain, and we've got one guy who's done extensive testing and streaming in that format to lead us through this GP. Matt, how'd you watch this thing go down this weekend?
GP Atlanta had 1,552 players. Some people said it was a little bit on the, you know, medium size, like they expected a little bit of a bigger crowd. A lot of people went down there, ended up being taken down by, and I'm going to butcher his name, Payun Zhang, I believe is how you say his name. He took it down with the Banned Spirits deck. In the top eight, we had KCI, Banned Spirits, Hardened Skills, Infect from Kazu Negri, Martin Yuza played Hollow Wand, another KCI, Bridgevine, and Tron. All the pros were down there. The Pro Tour's down in Atlanta next weekend, so this was the GP right before. That was the second GP win in a row for Banned Spirits, so I think it's definitely on the radar. There's definitely some interesting decks here. The decks that are basically like just playing with themselves type of thing. I mean, we had a Boggles at 8-0 on day one. We had Jund. There's a lot of Jund in the room from what I saw. So a good chunk of Storms and Jeskai control, white-blue control type of thing. Humans is kind of coming back up. We had a, Sean, you would love this one. Soul Mako was 8-0 after day one with The Rock, who is the original, I did not know this, he was the person who actually originally named Green Black The Rock.
Yep, Soul.
He was actually running one Thrun the Last Troll main deck. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. And two Mishra's Baubles. This was super. I don't know. We also had a Possibility Storm deck hiding in there somewhere. I watched it play. And while it looks like a lot of fun, it literally looked like he raided his cube to play the format immediately before the tournament started. Fairies was back at 13th place. The rest was kind of like Red Green Valakut, the Mardu Pyromancer decks with Nahiri's been seen in and out of some of these decks, and it's back in now. Brian, did you get to watch any of this, or did you review these deck lists at all?
I did do a little bit of the review of the top eight. I was able to watch just the finals, where the Banned Spirits took care of KCI in something like 4.5 minutes.
Both games. Oh, it's quick. If you let it do its thing, it is.
Oh,
quick.
God. Yeah, it was just absolutely nuts. So the best play that I saw in game two was he played a turn two Geist of Saint Traff into a turn three. I want to say he played Stony Silence and Phantasmal Image, something like that. And it was just an absolute beatdown. And so the KCI player just could not even get off the ground, you know, was able to even cast KCI and just could do nothing about it. So it was a real beating. And so that Banned Spirits deck, I know some people are not on it. They're calling it kind of like a merfolk deck. It's too much, you know, too many clunky hands and spell queller. You just have to keep up, you know, can't be proactive. I still think it's one of the most powerful decks in the format.
I've played against it a lot, and I think it's a very, very powerful deck. Where did this come from? Was it really the printing of that other lord that did it? I mean, there's not really many new pieces in there. Especially the one drop, the Maelstrom Wonder, that card really, really helps with that deck. Sean, did you get to see the 26th place Eldritch or Devoted Evolution deck? I think that one's kind of interesting. I'm not sure how good it is, but did you get to see that on camera at all?
I didn't get to see it play out, but there are so many decks, not only in this tournament, but that I have put together that owe their kernel of power to Solmaka and the Rock deck philosophy. Every deck that I build, it seems on some level, Standard, sometimes Legacy, owes itself and its theory of deck advantage to Solmaka and his Rock deck. And anytime you're talking about Eldritch Evolution, you're talking about something that exists on that principle of being a better one-for-one deck than what your opponents can do. There were a couple of things that stuck out to me. Stephen Pete's 8-Knight Naya deck. Yeah, it went 10-5. That was good for, I think, 140th place. It had 4 Knight of Autumn, 4 Knight of the Reliquary, It was a 28 creature deck that used Collected Company. But the one thing I was scratching my head about, you've got a green white deck. He had no Horizon Canopy anywhere in the deck. That would seem to be your card advantage spell outside of Collected Company in that deck. And then, Matt, you mentioned this a moment ago. Yuya Takahashi's Fairies in 13th place, 12-3. This is a Fairies deck that knows exactly what it wants to be. Two Cast Down, three Cryptic Command, four Fatal Push, two Heroes Downfall, a Spell Pierce, three Jace the Mind Sculptor, three Liliana of the Veil, four Snapcaster Mage, and two Spellstutter Sprite.
Yes.
This is Control Fairies at its heart. Four Bitter Blossom. They are winning the game with Bitter Blossom, or they're winning the game with Snapcaster Beatdowns. I talked about that earlier. Still a viable strategy, by the way. Or they're using the Jace the Mind Sculptor Ultimate in those certain control games. And, Matt, you'll love this. Three Creeping Tar Pits. I know you love a Creeping Tar Pit. That is a list that I'm very interested in. Takahashi's Blue-Black Fairies list.
This was great for me to prepare a little bit. I think decks that I'm going to be looking out for the first weekend of December are going to be Banned Spirits. I think also control decks are going to be back around. A lot of Celestial Colonnades. And then we're going to have, you know, our typical combo decks. And then I think there's going to be a lot more Arclight Phoenixes around. And I have a very, I'm going to call it a narrow sideboard card that I will reveal here. And it is done. I've only played it through one league, but it's done a decent amount of work when I have played it. And that is Raking Canopy. Those decks are going to be the ones that I'm going to have to watch out for are your Arclight Phoenix decks, your control decks, and then Banned Spirits.
Matt, there is a favorite comment that I had from this weekend, and I don't know if you took this to heart. Kazu Negri, he has been a renowned Jeskai Control pilot. He showed up this weekend at GP Atlanta with Infect, and when he made the top eight, and they asked him why in his top eight profile, he said, "I just didn't like working so hard for my wins." I thought that was a fantastic insight to the format. And sometimes it's just great to go aggro. I have to agree with them. Just this weekend, I put together the mono red aggro wizards deck on Arena and have been playing. I probably played it like 10 total games, but 50% of the time it feels like you're cheating. 40% of the time it feels like you're playing Magic. 10% of the time you get that homebrew nerd who's playing mono white life gain and you just can't win those games. So most of the time it feels like you're cheating in the format to a certain extent. That is what Infect often feels like in Modern. In Legacy, there are other tools to fight it, but in Modern, it feels that way. Are you thinking about that mindset? Not necessarily with Infect, but with a deck that can give you quote unquote free wins if your opponent stumbles.
So the bug deck I have is not, absolutely not one of those free win decks. I'm thinking about that because I want to make as consistent of a deck as possible because the Invitational is going to be a long, long day. Hopefully it's going to be a long 2.5 days, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. But it's going to be a very, very long day. And so that's something I really, really want to pay attention to. It's going to be mentally draining, but I don't want to stumble nearly as much as my opponents will be able to take advantage of.
Matt, I've been to events in Charlotte before. When you're done after day one, I've got some great places for you to hit up. So we'll just help you out with that coming up in December for the SCG Invitational. What, nothing? You're going to let me get away with that? Okay, that's fine. We'll just move on to the next thing.
I am. You're the one that's going to sound like a fool.
I would love it. I would love it. Well, I was actually just putting together the list of things that we have to talk about coming up later in the year, and it occurred to me that there are no events scheduled for the week of Monday, the 26th of November. So if you're going to take us through play-by-play of your victory at the FCG Invitational, I'm looking forward to it that weekend. And I hope we do get to do that. Speaking of things we love to do, it is a Pro Tour pick-up weekend here on TriHearts. But before we get there, Matt has a soapbox to get on, a very shiny soapbox, after he was trying to pick up a very special thing in the Wizards virtual checkout lane. Matt, it turns out that WotC has decided to send out some premium bling But are they getting that bling to the right people's hands? What is it about Ultimate Masters that may have you excited? Because you blew up our TryHards text feed with some really sweet cards over the weekend.
If you've been living under a rock that is currently on the moon, on the dark side of the moon, then you don't know what Ultimate Masters is. Everybody who ordered from the Mythic Editions from the Wizard Shop, which I tried to, but the site was down and I just did not. It was just sold out by the time I had it. But everyone who actually went through the checkout process got a letter in the mail in the last week, said, hey, sorry, you may or may not have gotten your Mythic Editions, but sorry, it was a terrible, terrible, experience. So here's some free cards. And they opened them up and they're masterpiece cards from Ultimate Masters that's coming out December 7th, which means I'm hoping that we will be able to take some Ultimate Masters at the Invitational if we have a little bit of a pre-release there, but I don't know how that's going to work. They've released all of them today, but some of them are they're full art, and you get if you buy a box, you get a full art card, a random one inside a pack. There's 40 of them. I really love the new reanimates. Those are pretty hot. Sean, I would say that should go in your reanimator deck.
Mm-hmm.
Liliana the Veil's full art looks sweet. The Through the Breach and Eternal Witness are just, yeah. Sean may have to bleep this out, but the Tarmogoyf looks like Michael Bay had a wet dream and a nightmare at the same time. I think it's atrocious. These cards are super interesting, super sweet, new Fulminator Mage, tons and tons of stuff here. So what Ultimate Masters is, it's a premium Masters product, 24 packs per booster or per box, $335 a box, $34.99 per three-pack MSRP at the big box stores. And I think the traditional MSRP is a $12.99, something like that. It'll be on Magic Online at $6.99 a pack later. And they basically just showed us what these, what a lot of the mythics and some of the rares, and then a big chunk of the, or I'm sorry, one of the uncommons as well, and a big chunk of the mythics. But wow, is this stacked. People are whining about the price. Here's my soapbox. Just looking at the rares and mythics, they're printing all the mainlands at rare. I mean, they're printing Ancient Tomb at rare, Engineered Explosives at rare, Kitchen Fink, State of Uncommon, Fulminator Mage, rare. I mean, you've got a couple kind of, I would call them the turds, you know, the Sigarda, maybe the Maelstrom Pulse, Lord of Extinction. This looks like it's just going to be packed to the gills with value. And yes, I understand it's a lot of money, but at the same time, these are going to get cracked for these masterpieces. And the pack is actually inside the cellophane wrapper, so you can't buy it and not get it. But these are only available at LGSs in full boxes. I am super excited for this. It was kind of last minute. Yes, it's a lot of money, but it's going to really help drive down prices on some of these. I mean, your Liliana of the Veils, your Karn Liberateds, your Snapcasters are going to see a chunk. The new Bitter Blossom looks amazing. That's going to drive down the price. Hell, you even have Demonic Tutor and Goryeo's Vengeance at rare. I am super looking forward to this. This isn't meant for everybody. And yes, I understand it's expensive, but you know what? This is another case of, oh, they gave me a $100 bill and they folded it wrong, because these cards are going to be super, super chased, and it's only going to drive the price down for about 2 months or so, unless they just flood the market with it. Or save your nickels and save your dimes. These cards are never going to be cheaper again, but this is the last master set they're going to have in the foreseeable future, they said.
I'm just going to throw my 2 cents in as an artist's son. Demonic Tutor, second best art of the dozen I've seen so far. Bitter Blossom, far and away, number one art for the cards I've seen spoiled so far. Brian, you love Modern. Is there anything that's got you turned up from the releases we've seen so far?
From the releases so far, I absolutely have to agree with you. The Bitter Blossom art is phenomenal. I've actually been very, very happy with all of the art. And some of it, when you go on the Magic, the Wizard site, and you look at the full art compared to, you know, even just the normal card frame, some of that is just so stunning. Through the Breach, I think, is absolutely phenomenal. The Eternal Witness artwork is fantastic. The Tarmogoyf, I agree with you, Hurley, is not great. But the one that really stuck out to me, I love the new Fulminator Mage artwork. I think that is phenomenal. And then the one that I really, really like is the Dark Depths. The new Dark Depths art, it's kind of got the monster looking up from the bottom instead of like kind of looking through the ice at the top. And I just think it's so it's so good about what this card does. It's so much different than what the original art was on that card. You know, when someone plays a Dark Depths on camera or you see it in a tournament, you're kind of like, eh, it's this kind of washed out little land. I mean, everybody knows it's powerful, but it's kind of like this kind of grayish, you know, do nothing, eh, whatever. This one actually has like the tentacles and the teeth. It's just really, really cool. So I'm expecting to see a lot of Legacy players probably pop on that Dark Depths real quick.
What about the Through the Breach? That might be the most story-driven card I've seen in here.
Oh, yeah, the Through the Breach with the Emrakul on the artwork.
Yeah, that's it's just... So if you look at it closely, there's Nahiri standing there summoning Emrakul out of the depths. So I think that's pretty cool.
Very cool. Yeah, you got to love that new artwork, like with the story kind of built in right there. So, yeah, this is great. Can you imagine, guys, trying to like draft something like this? I just can't even imagine trying to draft something like this. It just doesn't seem like it would go that well, but it might just be something like, you know, everybody throws into a pot, have some drinks, and crack this box. Huh, we might do that for the Shark Tank Christmas holiday party.
Everyone could toss in $50. I mean, this is what people are looking at. Let's say $40, draft the entire box for 8 players. You know, it'd be like 45, something like that. And then whoever wins gets the box topper. I don't know, something crazy like that.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. I think that's exactly what we're going to do, actually.
It is a Pro Tour Pick'em weekend. I'm furiously going through my notes because I spent a good hour making my notes today, and I think they got mixed into one of the other shows that I did earlier today. And so you guys are at a huge advantage. I don't have my Pro Tour Pick'em notes.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
That's what we needed, was an advantage to beat you.
Yes, and Hurley is absolutely right, because as we look at the standings right now, Matt is the King of Kings with 4 crowns after 8 Pro Tour Pick'ems. Brian has 3, and I have 1. So that's the way it stands right now. And that's only because we didn't count the last official thing with the where I had Golgowski. And okay, we're moving on from that. Here we go. This is going to be the order this week for picks. Matt, and then Brian, and then me. So let's get it started. Pro Tour Pick'em golf format. We've explained this before. Lowest score is best score. So Matt, you're first.
I got to say, I got to steal the what I will call the favorite, and that's William Huey Jensen. You know, he's got 6 Pro Tour wins, 24 top eights, nothing special there. He's got 5 Pro Tour top eights. You know, he's been awfully quiet. I'm not going to lie about
Oh, since he won the world championship last year in his hometown, he's been awfully quiet. He was only on last year's Pro Tour championship team. Yeah, this guy, he hasn't done anything.
When lately. I say he's been quiet, I mean he hasn't been on social media a ton, showing or on his on any articles or anything, just saying, "Hey, here's what's good, what's bad." I think we're going to have a surprise out of him. Like, when I say a surprise, I mean a surprise deck. And with it being standard and booster draft, I think he is just an easy shoe-in for first.
Taking chalk, last year's championship team.
I was going to say.
You got an eye roll from me, Matt, right now. Brian, next.
I know.
Brian, you get pick number 2. Is this going to be the boyfriend, or are you going to hold off for later?
Oh, no, the boyfriend is nowhere on the list this year, guys. Nowhere on the list. I have turned over a new leaf. I have approached the Pro Tour Pick'em from a completely different meta cycle of data I've been looking at.
First of all, this is what teachers do when they have a lot of downtime, apparently.
Oh, there's no downtime in teaching. It's one of those things where I can come up with a word like meta cycle off the top of my head. That's what I do when I teach.
How do you do that in awesome. Latin?
We'll just say meta is a Greek word, and you know, cycle would be cyclus. So we'll do meta cyclus. That's
okay.
What we'll do.
I'm sorry, we can't pay you as much as the guys on Leaving a Legacy to do Latin translations.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that check too. Don't worry. So what I was looking at through all the stuff here, there's so many good players that we know. There's the Saitos, there's the Yasukas, there's the William Huey Jensens, there's the Turtenwalds, there's, you know, the Segrists, there's the Manfields, all of these people, the Reed Dukes of the world. Yeah, it's gotten us points. It's gotten us, you know, a fourth, 4 wins, 3 wins, 1 win. But I feel like going into Pro Tour, you kind of have to look at recent results. And so I've crafted my list looking at how people are running a little hotter more recently leading up to things. So my first pick is going to be a little surprising. This is a name from the past, very, very recognizable, but somebody who's kind of had a renaissance, as it were, on the grand stage. And so for my first pick, I am going with fourth place at last year's World Championships, Shehar Shenhar. I think he's been going really, really hot. He's kind of changed, kind of turned his life in a different direction. He's been devoting a whole lot more time to Magic, and I think he might be primed to have a really, really high finish at this year. So Shehar Shenhar for my top pick at Pro Tour Guilds of Ravnica.
I like it. He's a guy who's been in the spotlight lately, and you're right, Brian. He talked about wanting to get back into Magic on the highest levels most recently. I've got some numbers for you. 27th, 128th, and those are the last two times that he was picked for a Pro Tour Pick'em. See, sometimes in Pro Tour Pick'em, it's not about picking the best players. It's about picking the ones who just, frankly, make day two and don't ruin you by just coming up 386th place on day one. And so I'm picking my first pick with a little bit of that in mind. And this is someone who can absolutely spike a tournament. This is someone who has set the bar for Standard right now with his Boros Aggro Angels innovation. The question is, now that the world knows this is loose, can he beat his own creation? And I'm going to take Brad Nelson in my number one pick. This is somebody who has Standard in his crosshairs and seems to be a master of not only tempo in Standard, but in answering other players' tempo in Standard as well and finding positive outcome ways to do that, meaning that there are card or tempo advantage plays. So Brad Nelson, my pick, number one slot this week. Matt, who you got for your number two?
Well, I'm kind of with Brian on this because I really want, I don't know. I don't want to pick the normal, you know, hey, like these are just the best players in the world, but I'm
you
also
just picked William Huey Jones.
I really was like, do I want to pick one, you know, one shoe in and then go for, you know, go for broke on the other two? Like that's, you know, is that something I want to do? You know, one that another one, he's been kind of quiet on social media, not like what he's been doing. I want to go with Martin Yuza. He's on a good team. I'm just sticking to my guns because I want to win. Because I want to win, damn it.
The best team of all time. He's, you know, this guy, he kind of, he knows.
Yeah, when I say he's been quiet, I mean social media.
Just made another top eight at a GP. No big deal. Big whoop.
Yeah, yeah. You know, he was just, he just made a top eight at, you know,
in Atlanta
weekends ago.
Well, I'm doubly mad at you because he was my number two.
And here's actually on the Standard side. This Standard has been really, really hard to suss out. Instead of being kind of a three-deck format, I would say this is a five- or six-deck format, and you still have room for innovation. Now, yes, some of these archetypes might be very similar, but I don't know. I can't read this Standard format, and that's what worries me about. Is it going to be, you know, all green-black at this Pro Tour? Is it going to be all, you know, all Boros Angels, you know, what was it going to be? And I think that unknowing is a new thing when we're this late into the Standard season, where usually you have it semi-solved within 2 weeks of the new Standard.
Matt, you are like, for people who love American college football, you are the Lee Corso of picks. You're like, I'm going to take this guy. He's a little bit underrated. He's only number six in the nation. I think he can get a win this week playing against the College of Pharmacy. Give me the Martin Jews ahead. Let me put this one on right now.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Ridiculous, exactly. Hurley. That's, you're ridiculous.
That's who you are. And Hurley, you just got to own it. You just got to own it.
I am, but when I say I wanted to pick the outsiders, I also don't want to lose.
No. You pick who you pick, and that's just how we're doing. That's
Brian, he just said he was picking an outsider. He picked Martin Jews.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
All right, who you got for your number two?
Solid player, had a really, really good year overall for the good old red, white, and blue in the United States. For my second pick, I am going with Andrew Bäckström. I feel like this is somebody who's going to be in that solid spot. Don't know if he's quite ready to, like, spike the PT, but I feel like his play is really, really solid. He's got a good handle on Standard. I'm going Andrew Bäckström on number two.
I think that's a great pick. It's somebody that has up-and-coming potential. Reminds me of my pick for the World Championships not too long ago. So I like where your head's at. there are certain players who exist in a bonus EV position of tackling an unknown metagame. They bring a weapon that maybe nobody has considered or people haven't researched enough. Then there are players who exist in known metagames and find those edges. This Pro Tour has been moved back further from the release of the set than we have seen in quite a long time. And when you're talking about players who have a chance to research the best decks and know how to get the most, even out of 50-50 decks in more powerful formats, I'm really expecting someone who has a known contingent of 6 or 7 great decks to research and figure out sideboard plans to do well. And in my mind, that's Reed Duke. This is a guy who's known for playing Jund. He's known for playing Rock. And he knows how to take those 50-50 matchups and use his experience to push himself over the line. We saw him play Grixis Control in Legacy when they had GP Reed Duke. And if you give him a relatively known metagame, we mentioned this earlier in the cast, there's 6 or 7, maybe 8 top-end powerful decks in Standard right now. And if you give a player with his credentials the ability to metagame those 6 to 8 decks, and not just try to break them, but just to know how to take a deck in his favorite format and use those sideboard slots to give himself a little bit of an edge, then use his edge as a fantastic player. I think this is a format where innovation isn't going to be as big as it is knowing the metagame for your preferred deck. And in those formats, I think Reed Duke shines. Matt, who do you got for your 3 pick?
I have picked this man's partner in crime, I think 2 or 3 times. John, you just went, you were just talking about Reed, about how he can read a meta, bring something that attacks that meta. I think this player is very underrated, and I'm kind of jaded because I listen to his podcast every single time he comes out with a podcast, pretty much weekly. I'm picking Brian Gottlieb. Every time I hear him talk, he near hits the nail on the head about where the format is going. I mean, obviously he has his misses, but he'll say, hey, this weekend, here's what I would prepare for. And he is close. And I think he is super underrated. He's just kind of getting back into the whole, I wouldn't say back into the professional side of things, but he's more active now than he has been a lot more lately. And then he has a really, really good listener base that really delves down into the format, and he can identify those microwaves within formats that I think probably a handful of players in the world can actually do. And I've just been super impressed. I did kind of follow him during Atlanta. He didn't do so hot there, but yeah, I've got to say I was super impressed with Brian. So,
all right, Brian, who you got?
Coming up in the third spot, somebody no stranger to the top tables from the great country of Brazil. And no, this is not PVDDR. I am not going down that path. I am going with countryman Lucas Esperberto. I feel like his limited play is absolutely just second to none almost. Such a good handle on the metagame. Former national champion, granted that was over 10 years ago, but I still feel like somebody who can play at the level that he's at seems to be just somebody who's ripe for having a really, really strong finish at PT Guilds. So going with Lucas Esperberto for my third pick.
My last pick, I feel like a little bit of a Fast and Furious movie at this point. Ride or die, man. Ride or die. He's going to be there one of these times. I feel like we're just a little bit off rhythm. Every time I don't pick him, he has a fantastic finish. And every time I pick him, he finishes 358th. But I believe in you, Shoto Yasuoka. We're riding together again. Ride or die, brother, man. Ride or die. We're going to get this right one of these times, and you're going to win me my second crown here on Try Hard's Pick'em.
So, Hurley, I feel like this is where we need to just pass the boyfriend mantle from Marcio Carvalho onto Yasuoka for Sean, because six times now that you've tried to pick him and it just hasn't happened.
I was actually looking over the pick'ems before this. We've had 8 pick'ems. I've picked him 5 times. coming into this tonight.
That's about right.
Hey, when you believe in somebody and their talent level, I'm not afraid to ride or die with them, just like you with Marcio Carvalho. And I'm going to get it right. Every time I pick him, he has a bad outing. And every time I don't, he comes in like 16th. Shota, we're getting this done this time, man. I need my second crown, and I think you're going to be the one to bring it to me. So let's recap for Matt. It was William Jensen, Martin Yuza, his outsider, and Brian Gottlieb.
That's not what I said. Thank you very much.
Yeah, okay. It was. We were all here. And Brian Gottlieb. For Brian, Shahar Shenhar, Andrew Beckstrom, and Lucas Ether Berthaud. And for me, Brad Nelson, Reed Duke, and Shota Yasuoka. All right, goal score as usual. Lowest score wins. Oh, my God. This has already been a disaster this weekend. Let's roll up. Hopefully nobody's afraid of heights as we roll into the elevator this week. Matt, as we head into a pro tour, what financial advice do you have for us?
Rao is it Viceroy. This card you can get still for about $750 or so. This is a planeswalker that is slowly, instead of going with like 3 Teferi or 4 Teferi, you're getting like 2 and 1. I think it's just going to see more and more play. And I think $750 for this planeswalker is criminally underpriced. I'm not going to call it the new Teferi because it's not the same power level, but I think it is more answers to the format than Teferi is. Pick those up at $750 because a breakout weekend, especially this weekend, and you're looking at a $15 to $20 planeswalker.
Ral, is it Viceroy in the elevator this week? Whether or not the elevator is in your graveyard or in exile. Time for this week's 3 minutes to brew. Our brewmaster, what do you got for us?
I've got an interesting card here, gentlemen, and usually we pick a rare, a mythic rare, even as much as an uncommon, I think I've done in the past. But there was a card that kind of cropped up this weekend in some of the legacy coverage at Eternal Weekend in Pittsburgh that really caught my attention. And I've seen this card in a couple of different formats, and we'll get to that after I hear about our gentleman's brews. The card I'm talking about is Acroan Crusader from Pharaoh's Flock. This is for 1 red, a 1/1 human soldier with heroic. Whenever you cast a spell that targets Acroan Crusader, put a 1/1 red soldier creature token with haste onto the battlefield. This is not a card that I would say is going to maybe take over a game, Hurley, but I'm curious to see where you would go with this if this was your build around.
I've played with a Crone's Crusader before. It did see some standard play during that block. I just don't know if it's powerful enough to see play outside that. There was the mechanic that was in Theros that had like multi-targets you could pay additional ones. That's what you really need. And I really think the only place you're going to see this played at is within like Zada Hedron Grinder decks, which is EDH almost exclusively. Whenever you cast an instant sorcery that targets it, it copies it for each other creature you control, and you want to be playing a lot of these heroic cards. There's a lot of really good heroic cards, but I just don't know what format those fit in, unless you have something that targets multiple things. Maybe you're playing like a blue-red aggro deck, some human synergy there, because a lot of blue cards, they up to 2 or 3 targets. You know, maybe some that I think there's one that's like a +1/+0 and unblockable. Maybe that's the type of deck you want to be playing, where it's a really low blue-red aggro deck that you're playing like coordinated assaults in, and then like those blue unblockable cards. I don't know where it fits there, unless you're playing, like I said, unless you're playing those style of decks, or even like maybe a red-white.
Sean, what do you think about Acroan Crusader? Is this something that can find a place outside of its lonely upbringing?
I think this goes into a classification of cards with Beam Splitter from Guilds of Ravnica and the hero card from Theros as well, where when you target it, it gets some special effect. This one makes a 1/1 Beam Splitter, copies the spell. The Crusader card gets a +1/+1. So if you can arrange an aggro deck with those mana requirements, and we're talking about Jeskai at this point, and that seems pretty difficult in Modern because that's where all those cards are legal. Obviously, it's not going to stand up in Legacy. That's a tough sell to me. So with the falling of the Mardu Pyromancer deck out of favor in Modern right now, because I just don't think it lines up with what's being preferred in the metagame. Not just good, but preferred. I think this is going to be a hard sell right now based on what it's asking you to do and the support cards it wants you to play.
I'm surprised that you guys aren't a little bit higher on this card. I was pretty interested in this card after hearing it that a red-green heroic deck had gone at 6-2 at last check at the Legacy at Eternal Weekend, which got me to think about this stuff. Any deck that can go wide, I think, has legs, because there's plenty of cards that going wide is a fantastic strategy. We just heard how Bitter Blossom, basically in the Fairies deck, 13th place at a PT, that's what that card does. It goes wide, and it gives you such a huge advantage over your opponent. The issue and the drawback is, and that's why this card is a common, is that you have to target it to make the 1-1 with haste. The issue is you have to make it bigger and then crank out the 1-1s, because a 1-1 is not going to stick on the battlefield anymore, no matter if it's in Pauper, if it's in Standard, if it's in Modern, if it's in Legacy. So if you can make it bigger and then start targeting it with basic spells, I think that's the way you can do this. And then in some way, maybe with some overload mechanics, maybe trying to pump your entire team that you've just made, that seems like a pretty good idea to me. I'm looking forward to seeing if somebody could take this card and break it.
As long as you target this podcast, you can make a 1-1 for your troubles. Acro and Crusader, this week's 3 Minutes to Brew here on Tri-Cards. Oh my, it has been a long, fantastical journey. We're not done yet. Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Got my butt kicked in the Modern Showdown, for one. Two, got to draft a little bit, which was a nice change of pace. Making some final sideboard adjustments, tuning adjustments to my deck, which I'm sure the sideboard adjustments will be in flux until the day before, but still really focusing on Modern, and I'm really hoping to do well at the Invitational.
It's always a possibility storm when Matt's involved. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Been reading a lot. It was great to actually read about some decks and then watch some of those decks in play at Eternal Weekend. I've been really curious about the Storm deck in Legacy. After watching my friend Eric play at our outing in the Quad Cities last weekend, it's been one of those things where it's kind of just sticks with you. Like, man, that seems like a deck that I could really, you know, play. It doesn't seem all that, you know, mysterious anymore. When you used to kind of watch people just kind of play cards and put them in the graveyard and bring them back, it's like, what's going on right here? That's something. So reading about it, watching it play, you start to see this play patterns. The other thing that I really felt like I got better at this weekend, I feel like I have a really good handle on the Vintage metagame, if watching a lot of coverage from Eternal Weekend is any indicator. Once I you know, would see the matchups, I'm like, oh, this is going to be interesting to see. Watching the Grixis Thieves deck by Como Kwok, which was playing 4 Notion Thief main deck, I was just like, oh God, I just cannot wait for somebody to play, you know, a cantrip outside of their draw phase and just watch, you know, Notion Thief get flashed in. And sure enough, it happened. That was fantastic. Watching, you know, some of those interactions that you can watch outside of what we're used to in maybe Modern and in Standard is really, really fun. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing some more Vintage coverage coming up, because I think stepping outside what we're used to is going to make us better at what we do the best.
I think stepping outside what we're used to is what I did this week. I built the Mono Red Wizards deck online. Oh, I mentioned it earlier. I just feel dirty. But you get so many free wins. That also feels good, too. All right, whether or not you're going to tap all mountains or you're going to flash in a Notion Thief in response to your opponent activating the Jace the Mind Sculptor 0, I don't think it gets any better than that. Unless you're listening to Tryhards. Oh, you brave soul. Thanks for joining us this week. We'll have more next week here on Tryhards.